Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the show. My name is Dan Hafner. Welcome to all of you returning listeners. If I'm assuming you've been here for a while, I'm super excited that you are joining me back and just haven't gotten tired of my voice. That's honestly very, heartwarming for me and exciting and motivating as well. And if you're new to the show, welcome. This is a crazy show where we talk about software, we talk about business, we talk about SaaS, we talk about technical stuff, whatever the heck you want to inside of that domain. So if you're joining us for the very first time, welcome as well. Now, before I go any further, before I introduce my awesome new guest I have for you guys today, wherever you're watching the show, wherever you're listening to the show, please like, rate, subscribe, leave a rating, anything like that, whether it's YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. That really, really helps the show, helps us grow, helps us, you know, get out there in front of people. And if you like this content or the show by itself, please share that with someone that you might think would find value in it. So get off my soapbox on that one. So I will introduce you to a guy very interested to introduce to you guys. His name's John Chan. Welcome to the show, John. We're going to talk a little bit about his background. He's done some agency stuff, some software stuff, really interesting stuff. So we're going to see where this goes. So welcome to the show, John. How you doing?
Dan, thanks for having me. Pretty excited to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, as I introduced a little bit and as I alluded to this, you kind of have a background in some agency work, right?
That's right. So I'll probably get into it. I mean, you know, in my career, there's three major arcs. I started up a career as a user experience designer. I learned how to code in high school. And so I started freelancing. I dropped out of school at 19. I started freelancing and building websites because that was a sort of the direction that I knew how to take. But I wasn't really good with the business mechanics of it. And so I, you know, ironically, when I left school and started freelancing, I actually got hired back at the university that I left. And so I joined them, you know, starting with as a web assistant, but sort of rose my ranks as a usability researcher and someone that was helping them with setting up usability labs and just kind of got really deep into the user experience of things. But that sort of eventually capped out, and I wanted to not just learn how to make the work that I produce serve end users, but also serve organizations and businesses. And so it got me into understanding about analytics. And I eventually became a CRO consultant doing that type of work, largely to make sure that whatever designs that I produced was not just improving user experiences, but also made an impact to the organizations that we serve. And so that was like kind of the first arc where I was doing user experience design. And then so the next phase, as I was doing CRO consulting, I joined a company, Basecamp, as part of the gigs that I was working on. And and for those guys, they exposed me to the business of software. And that was the first foray into software. And I wasn't really good at it. I used to work at Jason Fried, and, you know, it was my exposure to working remotely. It was, you know, at the time, you know, something that not every organization embraced, but they were fully on board with that kind of thing. And so that exposed me to seeing how a successful software business operated from the inside. And they were very dogmatic about, you know, their philosophies of you know, their programming and their approach of bootstrapping. And so it was a very interesting experience that I saw from the inside. And so timing wise, it was lucky because around the time when I joined that organization, they invested into one of the first coding boot camps to exist. And so the company back then was called Code Academy. It was later rebranded as the Starter League. And as part of that investment, all employees had free tuition. And so because of that, I basically got access to their curriculum, and I joined like a part-time course learning how to write software. And so that was that kind of transition. And then kind of similar to what you were telling me, you know, I started off doing that as a bit of a hobby. I was running apps on the side. I was basically practicing. But up until that point, learning how to make web pages or do user experience design was a lot simpler in terms of how to teach yourself these experiences. But writing in software was a lot harder. And at the time, you know, even though I went through the sort of like the part-time course, I really struggled with being a more formidable programmer. And so I used to go to meetups. I used to like do all kinds of things where I bring my questions to the thing. I would post questions to Stack Overflow, you name it. But it really didn't progress until when I went back to Vancouver, where I joined a coding bootcamp here as a TA. And so the company out here was Lighthouse Labs. And I started, and my pitch to the principal was that, you know, listen, I'm not going to be the best programmer on your roster, but I'll empathize with your student in a way that I'm just, you know, maybe like 1 or 2 years ahead of them. And he bought the pitch, but I also, you know, really stood behind that because I was one of their most effective TAs and teachers for a while. I eventually became their head instructor. But that my motivation behind that was getting access and exposure to the curriculum so that I can repeat the same sort of beginner questions over and over again. And that really solidified that sort of skill set. So when that ran its course, we went back to taking some of the products that we were building and we tried to build a company out of that. We wrote a task management software that had, we had great traction, but we couldn't commercialize it for the life of us. And so I think around 2016 or so is when we transitioned to being an agency, because the narrative at the time was that we told ourselves that we weren't good at user distribution. We couldn't figure out how to crack that code. And the best way for us to learn that was we wanted to see to see other organizations, how they joined it. And so we, going back to like our roots on conversion rate optimization, we joined these companies as consultant primarily to help them with the science, because we had skill sets around that. And then that eventually sort of morphed into, you know, a service model, eventually morphed into doing paid media and advertising, largely because we were moving up the chain as a service. It was not as good as to sell, and it was not very sustainable. We were going through this churn and burn sort of like feast and famine cycles of the agency world, where even if you did a really good job from a conversion rate optimization standpoint, we weren't kept on the roster. But paid media, when you had success, it begets more success. And I think that was kind of like pivotal to us. And so current form of us today, we're a paid media agency focused on e-commerce and SaaS businesses. And with a longer term vision of wanting to acquire brands for the skills that we have to bring and grow in-house. And so that's kind of where we are today.
Yeah, very interesting. I mean, I remember it's almost like they hear like a story arc or a character arc inside of a thing. Like I like the arc of your whole thing. It's really, really neat. And it's not over yet. So, I mean, you're a young guy. So, but anyway, so there's an interesting thing you picked up kind of at the beginning and you tied it together at the end there too. So, you know, there is, like you said, like there's people who are either good at programming and software, or there's people who are good at selling and acquiring users and getting out there and promoting, and there's just different types of people. I feel like it's a pretty rare breed of person that's good at both. You know, I feel like, you know, you kind of have, that's why they have team members, right? But have you ever experienced like a unicorn, somebody like that, who's like, they could build stuff, but then they can also go out there and like sell the crap out of it? Have you ever run into that?
I mean, absolutely. And I think it's, you're right, because I think the way that I would describe that skill set, and, you know, knowing what I know now, is that at the time when we're building products, especially as you're programming, you can see all the problems that you could solve with software. That's kind of like a new superpower that you find. You know, yeah. You talked about doing no code and in your shows, and it's like, it's interesting that you can do that. But what happens after you built the thing? Okay, now that you've built it, I did it. And the next thing you're going to ask is, oh, shoot, okay, I got to get people on this thing to make this sustainable. Otherwise, it becomes a side hobby that, you know, I can't reinvest back into product development. And so, you know, it was a natural progression of solving the next problem that a lot of software founders get into. And so for us, because we went through the software development phase, we built something that was, you know, was useful. People said that they liked. We wanted to figure out how to build the business. And I think at the time, we didn't know this. You know, I was also a little bit dogmatic about wanting to build that software as a bootstrapped company, largely because of my experience at 37 Signals. But this notion about building product, and now we talked about, you know, acquiring brands, is building versus buying. And I didn't realize this at the time, but there's a different skill set between going from 0 to 1 versus going from 1 to 10. And for us, and for me specifically, I realized I was actually much better at taking something that's already working, and you skip the product market phase of the exploration of product market fit, to having something that already has product market fit, see with existing data and use cases and existing customers, and really amplifying that. And I think that's sort of the large function that we're focusing on today, because you're picking the problems that you choose, and taking a problem that has existing data for us in terms of our skill set was a lot easier. Because, you know, from a programming standpoint, I can write software, but I'm not the best software programmer that's available, right? You have to pick the strengths that you have. And I think going back to my roots of being the designer in the first hand, it meant that I had to think things of interfaces and think of products that had some sort of traction already.
Yeah, I mean, it's if any of you out there have read, you know, any kind of Russell Brunson stuff or gotten into the marketing world, there's this concept of a red ocean and a blue ocean, right? And for those of you who might not have read it, a red ocean, you think of sharks and chum in the water, and there's just all kinds of competition. Whereas a blue ocean, none of that, right? you kind of that triggered that in my brain when you talked about that, because that is interesting. There's so many people I think that just kind of have this like brand new, like really cool shiny object syndrome of like this could be really cool, which it could be, but those improvement products, I think that's really, really interesting. And it's actually really cool. I don't know if you've are you a fan of AppSumo, Noah
Yeah,
Kagan?
no, okay, again, of course.
Did you get his new book?
No, I did not get his new book, but I was familiar with
Okay.
his work when he was working at Mint back then too. We talked about being the
Ooh,
first growth.
okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, anyway, I just asked that because I've been reading. I pre-ordered one of his things. It came in the mail yesterday. I got it for free. It was like awesome.
Nice.
I've been reading through it, and it's really interesting because I mean, I feel like even I struggle with this a little bit. So there's probably people listening that do as well. 'Cause like he goes through and he talks about this $1 million weekend of like, hey, you can build this business, but you need to get a selling cut or a paying customer first before you
Yes.
build anything, before you do anything else, get someone to pay you, pre-sell things, right?
Yes.
And part of me thinks, okay, but that doesn't apply to software. Am I wrong? Like, should I go and build something first, even if it's an MVP, if it's like hand drawn on a napkin, or should I sell the idea to somebody first? This is different from like selling a coaching program or a product or like anything like that. We're talking about software. Like in Europe, like what do you say to that?
Yeah, I wouldn't dare to say if there's a right or wrong way to do it because it's very dependent on the founder themselves and how good of a gut do they have around the problem that they're solving for themselves is something that they commercialize. Because I think for some people, if they have a good business sense around that kind of thing, then I think they should definitely solve the problem for themselves because they're effectively using that as a way to assess what kind of demand there is in the market. Because well, I have this problem. There has to be somebody out there enough to get us. In terms of our business, because they're thinking incrementally. How do I make this into something that can sell for $5,000 per month or $10,000 a month? I just need that people to make this a sustainable business. And for a lot of founders out there, that's where they're coming from. And that's a completely, perfectly okay thing to do. And with Noah's sort of method, I actually remember him talking about this in there was a conference that I attended a while back where he actually did this exercise with the audience where he basically held a dollar out and he's like, hey, can like. There was a problem that he proposed or something like that before he wrote any piece of code. It was like, hey, if I did this, like who's gonna willing to give me a dollar? And it doesn't matter what the dollar amount is, but the transaction in somebody's head of going from, people do this user research, right? They're like, hey, if I build this thing, would you want it? And they're like, yeah, of course. And then you build the thing and they're like, and then they're it's $5 a month. And they're like, well, actually. And so the notion of getting that first dollar is a litmus test around do people actually think it's worth paying for? And so if you don't have that sense with whatever thing that you build, then you absolutely should test that because otherwise you'll find yourself building, spending weeks or months building this product only to find out that people don't actually want it, right? And it's always that cold start problem that's very challenging that a lot of founders face. And so which path do you go? If you have a good sense of what the market wants, and people have better intuition around this type of thing than others, it's best to look at your history of your like gut calls and say like how good you are at this kind of thing. For some people, that's perfectly fine, it's perfectly appropriate. But for others that they're trying to solve a product, a problem that it's not necessarily their own problem, but they're trying to do product development for somebody else, then it's helpful to get that feedback of that first dollar in because what you're weeding out for from a user research process or customer development process is you're trying to weed out the people that say they want something but aren't willing to actually pay for it because it's actually not worth something. And so I'll give you like a third thing that goes that's a correlate to both of these things because a common theme around going about product development and figure out the commercialization piece is you can approximate whether if people want the thing that you're building by looking at whether if there's a manual equivalent to the thing that people are currently doing and the dollar cost that is associated with it, right? It's like, if you look at, it's easy to look at products that have already successfully commercialized, right? But if you look at something like Uber, people always needed taxis well before Uber existed. And so when you had software accelerate the process of doing that, the user behavior exists, right? And it's worth calling this out because there's a lot of people out there that build products and they're solving problems where there's no manual equivalent. They're not doing that thing before. And they're like, well, if I added this feature for doing weight loss, or if I added this feature for doing this like habit tracking thing, right? It's like people weren't doing that before. You're introducing, in order for you to commercialize your product, you're forcing them to adopt a new behavior.
Right.
That's usually when it's a big uphill battle.
Well, that's that red pill or red pill. This is not Matrix, Dan. This is that red ocean, blue ocean, right? You go into that red ocean and you give a little thing and it's like, hey, no, come over here, right? So that makes a lot of sense. And just as a super side note for you guys, in the book, yeah, Noah has like a challenge of like, hey, you know, ask someone for a dollar to do their thing. He said, you can even send me a thing. So I literally sent him a Venmo request.
That's so
funny.
And
he gave me a dollar last night.
That's so funny.
So yes.
What a G.
I was like, all right, you're gonna, he literally has his Venmo
book
thing
and a dollar.
And he's like, you can send me a request. And I was like, yo, no. How about a dollar? And he sent me. I was like, oh shit, look at that.
That's so funny.
So that's funny. Okay, cool. So I'm interested. Yeah, no, and the another thing you said a little bit ago really resonated with me. By the way, that last answer was gold. That was awesome. Thank you so much for that. Now walk me through your mentality, like walk me through your process of, cause I've kind of been in this place too, where the problems you had when you were starting something are not the same problems you have like a year later. Cause you've built some stuff, you've maybe automated some stuff, you've done some different things. So like, what's your process of solving the next problem? Is there a recognition phase? Is there a delegation phase and automation phase? Like what, take me through your process of like, okay, we solved this problem. Now we have to, is there even another problem we have to solve? Like walk me through your process on.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it definitely has changed over the years, but again, going back to sort of like the origin story that I had, if you think about the common thread between the sort of three major arcs of being a designer to being a software developer to being a marketer, I was just incrementally solving for the next immediate thing. And some transitions are harder than others, right? So when you look at sort of the web designer arc, well, if I'm building all these web pages, like how do I know if I'm doing a good job? Well, I have to look at the users. I'm impacting somebody on the other side. And so when you're trying to, so from a career path, not from a product development standpoint or a business standpoint, from a career development path, I was focusing on sort of the next most valuable thing, given that if I had the skill set for this, I should go figure out how to do that. And the same thing happened from, you know, if I became a strong user experience designer, I eventually capped out in the organization. Like, well, of course they're not going to, you know, pay me a bigger salary or care. Because like they're an institution, they're going to get paid regardless, you know, of how great of a user experience I delivered. I have to leave that organization to find somewhere that valued it, which means I can't work for a public organization. I have to work for a private corporation. And so in that sense, it was like a selfish sort of like self-discovery of like, okay, I solved this problem. What's next? And in that sense, the guiding compass was one, you know, that I was able to make that transition. And again, the common theme across the years, I didn't notice at the time, was that I was actually a very good learner, right? Going from 0 to 60 in any field, it wasn't easy advice I can give to other people, but it made a lot of sense for me. And so embedded into the problem of how do I solve the next immediate problem was taking inventory of my own personal unique strengths and weaknesses. And that's also true, not just from a personal level, but also appropriate for a product. If anyone's building any type of product development, it's one of those things that, you know, as a marketer, when I join organizations or when I work with brand owners and I like, why you? Why are you the person to win in this red ocean or blue ocean? Because it's not about the fact that there's a competition that matters. It's whether if you have a unique take or unique insight around the industry or that product development process that other founders or other people in the space cannot have. And that gives you your unique advantage, right? From a product development standpoint. And so going back to your earlier question of how do I find the incremental sort of like problem or this next sort of like problem solve, and that applies both from a career standpoint, at least for me, and also applies from a product development standpoint, was you can solve any problem, but which problems should you uniquely solve? And there should be a prioritization mechanism that you think this one is more valuable than the next set. And then so you know, at first you're like, can you solve any problems? And if the answer was yes, then you transition to, okay, I can solve all kinds of problems, but which one should I solve now versus which one should I solve later? And that's not something everybody's comfortable with, because when you see a fire, you want to put it out. It's very counterintuitive to see a fire and you want to let it burn.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. That's very, that's interesting. never thought of it that way. Yeah, I mean, you know, you bring up a good point with, well, let me ask you this. Actually, I want to ask something else while we have time. Do you like running an agency?
I do and I don't. Running an agency is very interesting because you get to be in a cross section across a lot of different organizations. You see a lot of patterns about what works and what doesn't. And somewhere along the way, you realize that, it's actually not about the founders. It's not about my skill sets. It's actually about, sometimes about being at the right time in the right place. And that's something that I would not have had the visibility for if I ran my own software company, because I would associate it that things weren't working because I wasn't good enough or something along those lines, right? If you're a VC, that's inherently built into them because they see a lot of patterns. Agency also gave me that visibility. But the other aspect about running an agency that I liked and I don't like is that, I like the fact that you get to repeat a lot of the same skill sets and a lot of the same playbooks, because if it works in one environment, you can then translate and take it over to the next one. You get a much better benchmark about what should be working, what shouldn't be working, and then you get to sort of make adjustments around it. So I think running an agency gave me a much better call in a lot of determining very situational decisions, right? If I have a campaign that's running, it's like, should I turn it on or should I turn it off? And if things don't work, what do I do next? And I think it really sharpened my senses for around that. What I don't like about it is that, the thing about being an agency is that, whether if it's inherently that relationship, or that inherently that service, people treat you sometimes as like a hired gun. And it's one of those things where it can get frustrating sometimes that you can do really good work for a business or a company, but that you may be misaligned in terms of the in ways that it shouldn't have been, and you get fired for it or something like that. And so that part of it, we ran into a lot of situations where it was frustrating. But I've also come to realize that it's not something that is unique to us. We're not the only agency that have grown a company business really well to the point where we're outgrown. But I think that being blindsided about it, that aspect of it when I was going through it, that really sucked. And so I think it has its advantage and disadvantages. But I think it's definitely more of a relationship and people business, more so than just the skill aspect of it, which is what I got into it for the first place versus what it turned out to be. But taking a step back, I do like running an agency. We are very fortunate to work with really interesting brands and very interesting companies, and it also gave us the infrastructure to bring on new team members into our team that we get to train, we get to work with, and we're very fortunate to have some really great team members on our team.
Yeah, no, that's a good answer. I ask you that because, and by the way, what you said, I have a lot of directions I wanted to go off this, but
Sure.
what you said too was that was interesting. I forget exactly what you said there about, I think like everyone kind of feels this too. You realize you weren't alone, right? I think that we as entrepreneurs, I
Of
think,
course.
especially with this explosion of like solopreneurs and kind of people who run kind of things on their own, is there it is a very isolating game. And I mean, it was funny when I realized like my path was, okay, I wanted to build an app and I wanted to figure this out and I built it and I did it. And then in the process, I was doing this podcast, doing different things. And I realized, oh, I built a really cool skill for myself that I could then go charge people to do the same thing that I did for me. And then hence an agency was born. And then that's, I think, kind of how a lot of people kind of get into it. And I thought that was unique at the time for me. I was like,
Right.
I don't know what else I ever think of this. But then I was like, oh, I'm pretty normal. That's kind of how a lot of people
Well, I mean, it's
do.
not about being normal or not. I think it's sometimes
Yeah.
okay to realize that, you arrived independently for the same conclusions that other people did because the environment and the situations led to it, right? Like, we're definitely not going to be unique in the fact that in the example we're trying to get to allude to was that, we got fired for growing a business really well, which is like, very ironic. You wouldn't have expected that. But again, if that's how the incentive structures were lined up, or if that's what the business model like sort of like perpetuate like created, then you're gonna come across that. And I think I find solace going through that experience largely because it was a frustrating experience for me because I had this sort of, idealist sort of mentality around, oh, you just gotta do good work. And as a product developer, you just want to build good products. You don't want to think about the business of software for a while. You don't want to be thinking about being a CEO, that kind of thing. It just wasn't part of what you thought you were gonna do. And it, but those are all natural and they're natural progressions. And I think part of it is, as you're going through whichever journey that you're taking, is just realizing it sooner or realizing it a little bit later, or just not realizing it at all. I think that's the kind of thing that we all have to kind of go through, right? So.
Interesting. All right, I'm gonna give you a rapid fire question. I just want you, it's gonna be an A or B answer. And then
Okay.
I just want you to say the, no thinking about it. I just want you to say what comes to your mind. And then I'll give you a chance to elaborate. So
Sure.
if you were starting over from zero today, you have nothing, you got a little bit of money, you lost your whole thing, everything burned to the ground. You'd start over, but you only had two choices. You could either build a brand new app or platform or software, whatever it might be, product, or do an agency. Which would you do? Go.
Agency.
Why?
Agency, because when you're building products is really hard. Even if you're really good at what you do, it's actually really hard to commercialize successfully. And there's definitely, you can strike lightning in a bottle. But agencies are interesting because there's always a need and demand for talent. There's always a need and demand for labor, right? And so, you know, if you misprice a product or service, you know, the product development and iterating cycle is you're changing your prices. It's a decision. And so you iterate through the product market fit cycle a lot faster with the service than you with a product. If you do a product and you made the wrong guess, it'll take another week to make the change or a weekend to make the change. And you have to go through that cycle. The cycle of changes and iterations is a lot faster with an agency, with the service model, than it is with a product.
Makes sense. Makes sense. That's a very good answer. Very good answer. Anyone ever give you like rapid fire questions like that?
No, but this is fun. Let's keep going.
I've never really done that. It just kind of came to me. I was like, I wonder, that'd be interesting. Very cool. Very cool. So, I mean, you know, as you grow, as you do different stuff, like what do you think is one of the hardest parts about what you do, about like just being an entrepreneur, running your own thing? What's some of the hardest parts?
Oh, for sure. I mean, you know, it's always the things that you don't expect that is the hardest part. You always get into business or get into software or get into something for one reason. And so I think currently in the arc that I'm in, the hardest part is actually about, I think it's still about leadership. And so for a while, you know, going back to the product development phase, you know, I approach the that product development as a product designer, as a product developer. And I wouldn't call myself a CEO at the time because I thought it was pretentious. And we're three freaking people. It's like, you know, like what is there to be a CEO of, right? And so I didn't want to be an entrepreneur, that kind of thing. And so I just kind of detested against that label. But somebody snapped it out of me for a while where he basically said, listen, you know, you don't have to be pretentious about it. You just say you're CEO of a three-person company, right? But it's important for you to adopt that label because if you don't, you don't know what it means to lead a team. You don't know what it means to bring in people in your organization that are smarter than you for each of the respective role functions. And so that shift helped me think about building product from the, you know, me working on the product directly to me building an organization that leads to great product. And so you're building product, but you're one step removed. And if you're good with that sort of development process and you know what to look for, you know how to make adjustments, that one step removed layer is an important distinction, but it helps you think about and transition from being product development to that company building sort of aspect. It was a lot more natural progression for me. But again, that job is hard because people are complex, motivations are complex. People are, you know, I don't think I'm a good manager, for example, but I have people on the team that's a good manager. And so then it really means that, you know, what am I good at are the things that are like, well, the technical skills that I have built up over the years meant that I was really good at giving feedback. The instructional sort of piece when I was working at the coding bootcamp meant that I was good at teaching and training people. And so you're really thinking about the organization as an agency now as how do you bring in people and training them and giving them time and space to become better at what they do. But you always run the risk of, you know, employees leaving. You always run the risk of, you know, and so as I'm thinking about all of these type of things and trying to build an organization, it's an important job, but it's also a very challenging job. And you're also trying to do that while balancing client and quality delivery. And you're trying to balance the business of actually maintaining that, you know, your thriving business. There's a lot of different moving parts. And sometimes it's not as forgiving that you have the time and space to grow into the leader that you need to be. You know, before you have other pressures in the business.
Yeah, it makes sense. Sorry for all of you listening. Never fails. There's like an Amazon guy that shows up in the middle of recordings, no matter what time of day we do it.
That's funny.
So sorry about that. No, I would agree with you. I think leadership, and I think it starts with leading yourself, right? I know like there was a time when I was growing and doing a lot of things and I failed at leadership, and that was hard. Like it was hard to like look yourself in the mirror and be like, yeah, you like didn't do what you were supposed to do, you know?
That, and also, you know, there's other people that are responsible, you know? It's like if you build a product and you screwed up and you're by yourself, it's like, okay, I took the heat of that, right? But, you know, when you have people like, you know, that's joining your organization and you made a wrong call or you made a wrong read, it's like, there's other people on the line. And I think for me, you know, trying to be someone that is cognizant of that, you know, I think that that's always really tough. And, you know, how do you make sure that people, because it's a matter of ethics. It's a matter of making sure that you're leading people down a path that it's not just good for you, but it's also good for them, right? And so thinking about those challenges, it's interesting. But it's one of the things that, you know, I'm glad we're going through this journey now, because I'm thinking about 5 or 10 years from now, you know, the job will become easier. I'm sure it's gonna be just as hard, but it's one that I'm glad that I adopted now.
Yeah. Okay. Now I'll ask you something I ask pretty much everyone coming on here, you know, with the topic of the year and last year, you know, is AI. It's kind of everywhere. It's kind of permeating stuff. There was, I think as of this recording yesterday, there's officially a Neuralink chip in someone's brain now.
Nice.
You know, it's like, I wasn't even aware of that. And then we did an interview and she's like, yeah, you hear about that? I was like, oh, interesting. It just moves so fast. So, you know, what are your thoughts on all of the, it's a vague question. So I don't, you know, but you know, what are your thoughts on this in terms of where things are going? Does it scare you? Is it helping you guys, especially inside of your agency? I'm sure there's probably ways you're leveraging it. I kind of find that with myself, like part of it scares the shit out of me. And then part of it, I'm sitting there this morning and my wife's sitting there studying for her boards. And I'm like, I love AI. Like it makes my life so much easier, you know? So I'm just interested to get, you know, you have any thoughts to add on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, very broadly, I think AI is here to stay and impactful in the same way that the internet has changed a lot of our lives in the last, over the last 20 years. Mm. And so, you know, there's, if you look at, you know, the developments of our technology, there's ones that are so impactful that are fundamentally changing. And I think AI is like that. And so there's some that comes and go, because for example, for a while, people thought the same way with, you know, blockchain and NFTs, and there's an element of that that's true. But I think AI is going to have a much more significant impact. And I think the way you look at it is, if you look at your non-tech friends and your non-tech circles and how much it permeates their lexicon, how much it permeates the way they impact the work. And so I think because of that, you know, in the same way, if I asked you, what would you do differently knowing what you know now about the internet that, you know, a lot of people basically slept on, you know, 20 years ago. And there's some people that fully embrace it and they're like, oh my God, this is the future. This is crazy. You can do all kinds of things over here. And they really adopted that and became, that's their career path. That's the thing that they tell everybody about. And it has a very, you know, large implication around their trajectory. And in the same way, I think AI has that. And so going back, we fully embrace it. You know, there's definitely a level of scariness that comes along with any type of like new technology. In this particular case, we don't know what the implications are if this gets out of hand. And I think, you know, you know, it's not something that that keeps me up at night, not because I don't think the threat is there, but largely because I don't think I'm the person to solve it. And I think if shit hits a fan and it becomes a really bad thing and AGI takes over and it gets really bad, I think, you know, humanity as a whole, everybody's going to be suffering from it. And I think that'll have a different course. But leading up to it, I don't think to be afraid of it. And so, so in that sense, you know, we as a business and an agency, like fully embrace it. The way that I think about it impacts businesses and agencies specifically is that I think AI introduced a layer of removing basically the need or the necessities of a junior and intermediate talent, right? And so for example, like, you know, if you think about from a copywriting standpoint or from a graphic design standpoint or even advice, right, there's a lot of things that you can get, you know, from you know, beginner and intermediate layers from an AI that you cannot get from, you know, someone that has nuance. And when I think about experts in whatever field, it's about how do I apply this, you know, on this situation, you know, this is the quote unquote, the best practices or the general advice I would give. But in your case, I would do this other thing because it's counterintuitive because you got to watch out for these type of things. That's the kind of thing that you get with mastery and expertise. And so you won't get that with AI, at least not yet. And that's why if you look at it from a product development standpoint, you know, AI's limitation is, you know, not a broad read of the internet, but specialized knowledge. And that's why from, again, going back to, you know, the product development, this is the point 2 years ago, which is, you know, a lifetime in terms of AI development, ChatGPTs, right? Is if you add additional context that's only personal to you or somebody else, that's sort of the next level of training that AI is currently having, because that's, you're training experts through GPTs. But up until that point, it means that that's you have a replacement for that sort of like middle, lower to middle layer. Implication is it means that, you know, the cost of production and cost of fulfillment from a graphic standpoint, video production standpoint, the cost of that is going to go down. And so I think as an agency, it's a wonderful thing. It means that you could do more with less. And from a skill development standpoint, both from a hiring perspective and from a, it means developing processes where you have people that are good at editing to guide the machine. And so it's about training people that, I think there's going to be two camps of skill sets that will eventually be developed. One of which is, how do I tailor the different AI tools and sort of like cobble them together and develop a process, right? So it's like, think about like AI articles, right? You know, you can go to ChatGPT and just type in ChatGPT, like whatever articles, and hey, ChatGPT, can you give me an SEO friendly sort of article, and you get whatever produced. But that output isn't going to be as, one, it's ubiquitous and everyone can access it, but it won't be as good as you take the output from that and then you go through other tools that helps you get, you know, a more refined output that maps towards the final output of someone that was an expert at this field. And so the process development of you designing the process, that's a skill set that's important, versus the people that are working sort of that. It really means that, you know, it's going to be hard if you're going to build a skill set around being a good copywriter. It's going to be very hard and challenging for you to do that because, you know, those things are going to be a dime a dozen, and the cost of production of that, you know, you're going to be competing with the machine. And so, you know, two different layers, fully embrace it. But identifying people or even developing skills around being good with process and AI processes, I think is going to be a very important skill set.
Yeah, lots of good insights there. I love the way you kind of framed it for those of us kind of old enough to appreciate, you know, I mean, I guess I never really lived in a world where there was no internet, now that I really think about it. I was born in 1990. So I never really, but, you know, maybe somebody a little bit older than me, maybe, you know, a little bit would recognize that. But the way you said that, of like knowing what you know now, knowing how impactful the internet was, if you treated AI the same way, that's a genius way. Because I mean, some people would have been like, I'm just going to sell my house and buy Apple stock, and, you know, right? And then like, boom, you know what I mean? So that's a really, really interesting way to look at that. And then I love what you said about the mid-level stuff and everything. So very interesting ways to think about all of this. So
thank you.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. Well, I think that's about time for us. Do you have anything else to add? Where can we get more information with you? Where can we connect with you?
No, for sure. I mean, I'm always happy to connect with the listeners, you know, happy to further conversations. If you want to best to find me on Twitter and find me on LinkedIn. LinkedIn's going to be a little bit harder because there's going to be a lot of John Chans. But our agency is 2X Growth Agency. If you look at me on LinkedIn, I'm JTC Chan. And you can also find us online at 2x.agency. That's the website address. And so, yeah, happy to connect and learn more about what you're working on.
All right. Sounds good, everyone. And those links will be in the show notes as well, too, for you. Well, thank you very much, John. This has been really fun. Very enlightening. This very, just very interesting, different conversation. Haven't had a lot of them like this on here. So I really appreciate you coming on. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it, Dan. A lot of fun for me as well.
Awesome. All right. Well, that's it for this show, guys. Appreciate you joining in. And again, if you like this show, if you got value from it, please feel free to like, subscribe, share the episode with anyone that might find value at this as well. So check out John's links in the show notes below. Like and subscribe to the show. And hope you enjoyed this episode. We'll see you guys next time.